This is the Mel Wright Real Estate Agent podcast show, and it's episode 51. And we've got a special guest, Jason Bates, and we're going to be talking about the relationship between real estate agents and mortgage loan officers and how they can effectively work together. So thanks, Jason, for joining us.
Thanks for having me on here, Jonathan. Really appreciate you allowing me to be a guest on your podcast. Appreciate that.
And hopefully Jason in the coming weeks will be joining us. My normal co-host Bill has got some urgent business that's going to take a lot of his time up in the next couple of months, but he will be periodically joining us because he's not leaving the show. So hopefully Jason will decide to help me out a bit in the coming months. Depends on how nice I am to him. I'm gonna be terribly nice.
Yeah. If you're nice, then we'll continue. If you're not nice, then I won't play.
I'll cut out. Hold on. Jason, can you outline, because you know you've been a mortgage loan officer for a number of years and highly successful, and you must have had a few kind of partnerships with agents. Can you give an outline, based on your experience, give some tips and insights about what worked and what doesn't work?
Yeah, so it really depends on the agent. There's personalities. People do business with people they like, number one. I mean, I typically don't go after agents that maybe don't fit my personality type. And so there are quick ways that I identify that. You know, if I start off a conversation with a realtor, and the first thing they do the handshake, the hand palms up kind of handshake, asking for money, that's probably a realtor that I probably wouldn't deal with. But after the relationship is established, of course, I have no problem helping in financially or helping drive business, because I am a true believer that the more I can help that realtor's business, then in return, that should help my business. And that's really what I go after first and foremost. You know, when I speak to a new agent, you know, how can I help your business? And I think there's a big disconnect that happens between realtor and the loan officer. And that is that the loan officer is just kind of riding the coattails of the success of the realtor and not offering anything to help that realtor's business. And I think that gets to be kind of a touchy little area when loan officers are speaking with realtors or realtors speaking with loan officers.
Yeah, no, and I really don't, what I've read and studied, especially in a seller's market, which thankfully are not all areas, but quite a few areas have become, over the past 2 years, a seller market. Having somebody pre-qualified and having a loan officer, as part of the team, can really make the difference between that person being able to buy that house and or missing out, really, doesn't it, Jason?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not enough anymore to say as a loan officer, hey, I'll get the loan closed and I'll get it closed on time. That's not enough anymore, in my opinion. Right now, with what's happened in 2000 from the economic crash and loan officers having to be licensed and things like that, most of the loan officers that are out there, most of the ones that aren't attached to a big bank, and even some of the ones that are attached to a big bank, are very professional. They've kind of lived through the downturn and have, you know, come out not unscathed, so to speak, but come out better, right? And so there's fewer of us out there. And the ones that are left are a lot more understanding of the process of a real estate transaction and what needs to go into it, what the expectations are, not only from the real estate side, but also from their side. So, you know, it's not so much anymore to just say, hey, I'll get your loan closed on time, Mr. Realtor or Mrs. Realtor. There's got to be more to it than just that.
So what would you, based on your extensive experience, would say some of the key things that a real professional loan officer takes care of, which people in the, that are not part of the industry probably wouldn't be aware of?
Well, knowledge. Number one, keeping the realtor up to date on changes that are happening in the mortgage world, because there really aren't that many changes that are happening in the real estate world. There are a little bit, you know, contract changes, that sort of thing that may be taking place. Of course, you know, the market itself is always changing from a realtor's perspective. But the mortgage world, as you mentioned before, it's so critical that their clients are able to obtain financing and know what to expect during that process. And a loan officer keeping a realtor informed of the changes that are happening on our side of the fence, so to speak, I think is really a critical component to the success, because we want to set the right expectation for the client. And the loan officer's client is not the realtor's client. So I want to make that kind of clear here too a little bit. Yes, the buyer is a quasi client of mine that I need to offer exceptional service to, offer the best rate to, the best terms, go over all their financial options that are available to them, not just one option that is available to them, but give them all their options. But it's a little bit more than that, in that you have to stay in contact with what's going on our side of the fence, relay that to the realtor so that we both together can set the right expectation for the borrower.
Well, that's great, Jason. So obviously with the crash, you had a lot of people where their credit isn't perfect anymore. You know, it's been quite damaged. So how do you help with that, or can you help with that? And can you give some insights about when you got somebody who does need help, because like so many people, they were damaged in the Great Recession. Give some insights about how you've helped people or can help.
Yeah, absolutely. So credit, this is becoming a touchy subject here in the lending world. And this is something that we'll see how this develops over time. But lenders are not credit repair specialists. And you get into a dangerous point as a lender to suggest certain things to be paid off or certain things to do on one's credit to improve the credit score so you can qualify. Because if you do these things and the borrower still cannot qualify, then you can be somewhat held accountable for those actions. So in other words, if a buyer pays a bunch of credit cards down and takes some of their life savings to pay those credit cards down to improve the credit score, and then they still don't get approved, that buyer can have some recourse coming after you as a licensed professional to say, hey, you told me if I did this, I would get that. Mm-hmm. And so that's a dangerous slippery slope that a lot of loan officers right now are leveraging to attract additional realtors. And I'm not saying there's anything necessarily wrong with that. We want to ensure the integrity of the credit report. And in doing so, there are certain things that are on credit reports that are inaccurate. And we want to make sure that those things are accurate. But we don't want to go so far as to say, hey, do this, do that, do this, and you'll get that, or you'll become a homeowner. So there is a fine line there as a licensed loan officer. A lot of lenders right now, companies are saying, hey, if we see a credit change in a credit score, we want a good letter of explanation from the borrower as to why there was an additional credit rescore done for this borrower. What was different? What were the circumstances before and after? And how did we arrive at this number, at this credit score? I will say too, this is all about keeping up with not the Kardashians, by the way, but keeping up with the mortgages, right? Is that here we're having trended credit coming out June 25th.
Oh, can you explain that?
So trended credit is Fannie Mae is the only one recognizing this at this, well, not yet, but on the 25th of this month, June, they'll recognize that when a borrower pays down a credit card monthly, rather than just making the minimum monthly payments, there's going to be a boost to that person's credit score. Suppose we don't know by how much, but the thought process there is that somebody who pays their credit cards off every single month is a less of a credit risk than somebody who has maxed out credit cards just making the minimum payments.
I'm amazed that that wasn't the case already, really, Jason.
Right. So this information is critical to relay to the realtors, right? And then having the realtors on the side with the loan officer as a team, a unified front, it's kind of like raising a child a little bit, right? You have the realtor. You can't have the realtor bad-mouthing the loan officer, and you can't have the loan officer bad-mouthing the realtor, and you can't have the title company bad-mouthing either one of them either. It's really when you're in a home purchase situation and you have a home buyer, they're already nervous as it is, having a unified front and having that open communication, especially with TRID and some of the changes that happened in November, is super critical to having a successful closing, therefore getting additional referrals.
Yeah, another area which obviously will affect the individual's ability to get the loan to buy the house, which they hope to, is that I'm only imagining this, and I might be wrong here, but you know, you have these rates that seem very low and very attractive, but they're with people that got a very, very kind of perfect credit score. What is the kind of rates for somebody that hasn't got terrible credit but did suffer through the Great Recession and hasn't got a perfect, you know, what are the kind of realistic rates being offered for? It must be a very substantial group of people, Jason. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, I mean, there is a lot of people, a vast majority of people who are in that middle meat and potatoes of the credit score algorithm, if you will. And the rates, you know, I don't quote rates because they change daily, right? Change hourly. But you would be absolutely surprised as to how good currently those rates are. So they're not far off from somebody who could get. Now, let me back up here for a moment, because it does depend on the type of financing that you get. FHA isn't as rate sensitive when it comes to credit scores. They are. Okay, but they're not as rate sensitive or rate impactful, I guess is the right word for it, as say conforming. Conforming, the lower the interest rate or the lower the credit score, you're going to get a higher interest rate. You're not going to get the best interest rate. You're not going to be, you know, maybe a half point higher, maybe, you know, 3/8 higher than what you could get if you had a excellent credit score. Now, vice versa, on the same token, on conventional, where you have private mortgage insurance, the private mortgage insurance are also heavily credit score driven. So that can be very impactful when it comes to your monthly payment, therefore lowering maybe the affordability of that particular home to that buyer. So having a great credit score on the conforming side, conventional side, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, is super important. It's a lot more important than, say, on the VA or the FHA side of things.
Right. What about the actual deposit? You know, if you can put, I don't know what the average deposit is at the present moment. Maybe you can tell us. But if you can put, like, let's say, I'm just taking this out of, let's say 25, 30% deposit, which is quite a substantial and probably out the reach of a lot of people. But if you can put that down, does that make a big difference to the loan rates and your attractiveness to the lenders?
You know, it used to be money talks, right? So the more money you put down, the better the terms, maybe the less documentation you may need, that sort of thing. That's not so true today. Now, it is true that if you put 20% down conventional financing, you don't have the mortgage insurance costs. On the VA or FHA, 20% down doesn't really change anything to things. It does make the mortgage insurance a little bit lower, but nothing really to sneeze at. You're still going to have mortgage insurance on an FHA. You know, the down payment, you can have a 620 credit score and put 5% down on a conventional loan. So you don't need a high credit score to put, you know, 5% down, which isn't that much, quite honestly. It's certainly not that much above what FHA requires, which is 3.5%. It's only you know, 1.5% higher than FHA requires, which is 3.5% down. And on the conventional side, I will say that if you have a 680 credit score or higher, you can put as little as 3% down.
Wow. I'm not going to go into this in the great detail because I don't want to bore the listeners, because obviously you can tell by my accent, I'm not originally American. I am an American-British joint citizen and I own property in Britain. I actually rent in America at the present moment, but hopefully next year I'll be looking maybe to buy a property. But I own three properties in England, and in England it's a very different mortgage landscape. I just thought quickly, basically the majority of mortgages aren't fixed, they're variable. And the lenders over the past, since the financial crisis, have been asking larger and larger deposits, up to 20 to 30% deposits, even from first-time buyers. Also, they, which I'm going to ask you, I think, I'm not sure about this, but I think in America, it might be illegal, but in Britain, they won't lend to people over 40, especially if they're getting to 45. Anything after 45, they're very reluctant to lend to people, and they actually ask for quite higher interest rates for people over that threshold. So I just thought I'd give you that background, Jason. So the age thing, is that similar to what in America?
You can't discriminate on based on age here in the United States. So, you know, I've done 30-year mortgages for, you know, individuals in their 80s.
Wow.
Yeah. You can't discriminate based on age, sexual preference, religion, you know, that sort of thing. Fair Lending Act here in the United States prevents us from doing that. And banks. Well, and you can't discriminate based on where a particular buyer wants to purchase a home either. It's called redlining. Every home should be available to every U.S. citizen.
Well, I think that's the way it should be, really. So that was fantastic, Jason. So we're going to go for our first break, and we're going to come back and delve in the world of mortgages and Jason's experience. See you in a second, folks.
Buying or selling a home in the greater Reno, Tahoe area? I know the best CRS real estate broker, and that's Karen Conrad. And you can find her at KarenConrad.com or call directly at 775-527-7021.
We're coming back. Got a great guest, Jason Bates. He's got a lot of experience in the mortgage industry. And
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, Jonathan.
I think it's a good thing, actually. You strike me as a very ethical individual. Yeah. So what's it like for the first time buyer now in you know, you're based in Arizona, aren't you? The Phoenix, yeah. Isn't that correct? So what's it like for the first time buyer in Arizona, and especially in Phoenix, which I am correct in saying is the largest metropolitan area in Arizona?
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. You know, it's kind of a mixed bag. If you're a first time home buyer, supply is a little low right now. First time home buyers often get into multiple offer situations here in Phoenix, which can be frustrating. That can be very frustrating for a buyer. There is a trend of buyers, you know, millennials, a lot of millennials want to purchase a home. We have student loan debts that really hold people back. We have properties that may not be as updated per what people see on TV. That's kind of killed some things, quite honestly. We had some investors, a lot of investors come through the Phoenix metropolitan area back when the crash happened, because you could pick up a property so cheap. They rehab the property and then they charge, you know, or ask a pretty substantial price for the home. Those investors have since left, but they took a lot of the inventory that a lot of first-time home buyers could afford. And so the affordability factor here in Phoenix, although for the West Coast, it's very affordable here in Phoenix, but it has put some stress on the first-time home buyer as to what they can qualify for. And it's almost made it to where first-time home buyers almost, not quite, but almost have to settle for some certain things. And that's never a good feeling when you're looking to purchase a home. When you have to settle for maybe a smaller backyard than what you wanted to get, or maybe you had to settle for a townhome versus a single family home, you know, that can leave a bad taste in buyers' mouths, if you will, or their minds, when purchasing a home. And don't get me wrong, it takes a great realtor, not just an average realtor, but a great realtor to find that home that's special to you. And I've said this in my podcast, don't settle. When it comes to real estate, don't settle. Get what you want. You may have to have patience in order to get there. But if you get a good team of, you know, a loan officer, realtor, working for you, not against you, but working for you, super important that I mention that, then you're going to have success. You're going to find the property that you want. And if you're in a situation where you're in a rental and you have to be out at a certain time, start that process maybe 6 months prior. You know, don't wait till the last 30 days and start looking for a home and a mortgage.
That's great advice, because I would imagine that really scatters a lot of people. Yeah. And that's why they have to rush into something which later on they slightly regret.
Yes. And then they end up, I've had people who have done that and then 6 months later tried to sell the property.
You know, wow, that's going to be a very expensive situation, isn't it?
I've had some friends who purchased a home and they're so excited about purchasing a home that they don't, you know, take the drive from the home to work during rush hour. Then they get into the home and they have to drive to work. And 6 months later, like, oh my God, I made a mistake. Rush hour is just a nightmare. Right. And then they want to sell the house because the commute is just too much for them to bear. Remember, when you're looking at a house, you're generally going out on a Saturday or Sunday or maybe in the evening or something like that, off peak hours of commute or whatever. And you don't really get a sense of what, you know, what it takes to get home or get to work for that matter. Like, that's why I talk about settling. Try not to do that.
Right.
Did I catch you off guard there, Jonathan?
No, you didn't actually. So, what about the new housing market in Phoenix and in your area? Is that taking up some of the slack for first time buyers, or is it recovered a bit, but it's still a little bit dormant?
No, actually, home builders. Are really seeing a surge right now because of the lack of inventory. You know, I really think that there's been an attitude shift here in the United States. Phoenix is probably just a small microcosm of this. But the United States, I think we've gone through a little bit of a shift as far as the attitude toward real estate, more buy and hold. It's not buy and I'll sell in 4 years or, you know, and make some money and buy a bigger, better McMansion type home. More people are looking at specific neighborhoods, location, schools, that sort of thing, and staying put in a home. And so home builders here in Phoenix is a kind of a spread out city. It's not a congested city. It's a spread out city because land here, traditionally here in Arizona, has been cheap to get. So builders would build on the outskirts of Phoenix, buy the land fairly cheap. It's kind of one of those attitudes of build it and they will come kind of thing. Excuse me. And so they'll buy land and then sell, you know, with you know, pretty good margins on the homes. Phoenix has recently, about, I think it was 6 or 7 years ago, passed a law where builders cannot do that so much. They're given incentives for infilling, if you will, where there are empty lots. Builders buy those lots or plots of land and then put in housing on lots. And we're seeing a lot of condos, a lot of townhomes, multi-family type dwellings in the inner city, urbanizing it a little bit more. And we're seeing some of those even high-end properties come in there. So we're seeing a little resurgence when it comes to the builders. Now, builders are still very reluctant to go all in Phoenix and probably Las Vegas, which is kind of a sister city of Phoenix. They're a little hesitant about it because they don't want to get burned again. And so, and the other thing too that I've heard from some builders here is that labor. It's not easy getting reliable labor because a lot of the people who are in the construction business, custom home builders, whatever, left. They left the industry and because of the downturn. And so getting, you know, good labor to that's reliable, which is difficult to do in the construction world, believe it or not, is a little difficult. And so there's also that constraint, if you will, of not enough workers to build the homes.
You know, that's a great insight. The other thing, I'm going to pause this. A controversial thing, and I just be interested to see if you could give some insight in it. I live in the Washoe Valley in northern Nevada, mm-hmm. and at the height of the crisis, the banks did repossess a lot of property, and they, there's suggestions when you look at the land registry and other is that they still own quite a book of property, and there are reports in Las Vegas and maybe in Phoenix that they still do. Plus, you had the hedge funds that normally didn't go into domestic property entered the market. Mm-hmm. So do you think there is a lot of property still available, but it's kind of slightly hidden?
Yeah, they call that shadow inventory, right? So I don't see it. Now, when we talk about a lot of property, do banks own some properties still? Yeah, they do. Is it more than they want to own? Of course it is. They don't want to own any property, right? But it's nothing like, you know, I hear this whole thing. I still hear it as well in Phoenix, that there's this big shadow inventory, and that's going to hit the market, and it's going to bring the property values down. Well, I don't see it. I just don't see that happening. Now, it doesn't mean that we wouldn't have another maybe possible economic downturn in the future. I'm sure we will at some point. We've had them in the past. We'll have them again. But I don't see shadow inventory to the extent that some people claim that they see it. And when I hear somebody say that, show me.
Yeah.
Where are you getting that from? Because I talk to realtors. One of my best realtors, she's really a who's who here in Phoenix, has been featured on some of the local news channels as an expert and things like that. She is an REO agent and frequently flies back to Washington, D.C. to talk to some of the not really politicians, but Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, that sort of thing, housing, HUD. And she is an REO agent for Fannie Mae, and she doesn't see it. So I don't know where people are saying this. I don't know if it's just maybe a ploy to make them feel like they are in the know or something like that, but I don't see it here in Phoenix. Doesn't mean it's not happening somewhere else in the country. I haven't seen it so much here.
Well, you can only talk about your own experience in your area of expertise, which is Phoenix. You've had many years. So, Jason, thank you for this great insight. How can people get hold of you, and what's the best way to get hold of you?
Yeah, absolutely. You can check out my website at www.valleyofthesunrealestateshow.com. From there, connect with me on any social media platform, just about any social media platform. My phone number is there. You can email me directly, all right there. And check out my podcast from there as well at www.valleyofthesunrealestateshow.com.
Oh, that's great. And folks, if you want to get a hold of me, it's really quite easy. Go to the mail right, mail-right.com. You'll find my email address, or email me at jonathan@mail-right.com. I'm on social media, mail@mail-right. So I'm pretty easy to find, and if you're in the real estate industry, look at MailRight, because I'm sure you're going to find it a super value product. Well, Jason, thank you for this special. I think we're given some great insights, and I think we've had a good interview, haven't we?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Absolutely. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of your podcast. I really appreciate that.
That's great, Jason.